Now, the next discussion that comes in books of fiqh, once you understand how to do the wudu, is, well, who is it mandatory upon? Who is it mandatory upon? And I think it's really interesting that many books of fiqh do it exactly in this order. First, they'll teach you the wudu, and then they'll discuss who it's mandatory upon. And the reason is because everybody should learn it, because eventually it becomes mandatory upon you. So it's not like you should find out whether it's mandatory upon you, so if you're a child, then you shouldn't learn it. You should still teach your children the wudu, even if it's not mandatory upon them. So first, the wudu is taught in many books of fiqh, and then the shurut of taklif, the things that make it mandatory, are then discussed. So it's sort of highlighting that it's important to teach, regardless of whether it's mandatory, and then you can determine whether you have to do it or not. So the very first, there are three conditions that are required in every act of ibadah. So the very first condition is Islam. You have to be a Muslim in order for wudu to be mandatory upon you, and that's obvious. The second is the age of puberty, that you should be above the age of puberty in order to be required to perform the wudu. And the third is that you have to be in a sense of sanity. You can't be in some kind of sickness where you've lost your senses. Those are the three things that are required for almost every ibadah. So for example, for prayer and for wudu, and you'll see it over and over again. The other two acts that are specific to wudu are, number one, freedom from hayd, nifas, and hadath. So what that means is that if a woman is currently having her menstrual cycle, then she cannot perform the wudu and expect it to occur. Right? The wudu is not mandatory upon her because she is still in a state of major impurity. She has to wait till her cycle ends and then take a shower in order to purify herself. She can still perform the wudu, and she can still earn. She can perform the wudu, and many ulama recommend that when a woman is in her cycle, she should perform the wudu, and then after performing the wudu, actually sit on the musalla and make dhikr instead of praying. So as sort of respect for the fact that there are five prayers and keeping up her schedule, but the wudu doesn't do anything technically in the sense that it doesn't open the door to touch the Qur'an, and it doesn't open the door to pray, because a woman can't pray when she's in that time of the month. Similarly, if a woman is in nifas, nifas means bleeding after childbirth. Can we open the back door? Is it a little cooler? Because it's kind of getting hot. Just maybe crank it open so that cool air comes in. Or maybe you can turn the fan on slow speed. So, the other thing to keep in mind is nifas. Once a woman gives birth to a child, there is bleeding that occurs after the child is born. And that bleeding can continue for many days, but the Sharia restricts it to 40 days. So within the first 40 days, any bleeding that occurs after childbirth is called nifas. And during that period of time, a woman also enters a state of major ritual impurity, which actually means she can't pray, she can't enter the masjid, she can't fast, and we'll talk about it in more detail soon. But in that case, when she's in nifas, she doesn't need to perform the wudu, because obviously the wudu doesn't do anything for her in the sense that it won't open the door to salah, and it won't open the door to the Qur'an. Finally, if you're in a state where you are releasing something that causes you to become impure, then you're not going to do the wudu at that time. Okay? So those are the three main things that you need. Freedom from hayd, freedom from nifas, and freedom from hadath. Now, the last thing that you need in order to perform the wudu is you need presence of water. Obviously, you need water. If you don't have water, you can't perform the wudu, and it's a blessing of the Sharia upon us that when water is not available, we can still purify ourselves, but we do it by something called tayammum. And tayammum means to purify yourself with earth, with types of earth, for example, sand or dust or dirt, and we'll talk about the ayah and the basis of that in a future lesson. The next thing is, what's the result of the wudu? Once you do the wudu, what does that do? It does two things. Number one, it opens the door to prayer. Once you have the wudu, then you are allowed to pray. And number two, it opens the door to touching the Qur'an. You cannot touch the Qur'an except in a state of wudu. It is makruh tahrimi to touch the Qur'an without a state of wudu.